Okay, we're out of executive session. We're at item nine, action items. Wayne?
Yeah, I do have an official request from Yvonne Commodore, who's heading up the planning committee for First Choice Academy. It was going to be, or is to be located eventually in Walterboro, South Carolina, asking to withdraw from today's meeting. And I forwarded that. Lord, we have a copy for the record also of that request. And it has to be handled officially by the board, so.
So we need a motion, right?
We need a motion to accept their request to withdraw and letting them know the board took action on that.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the request from First Choice Academy for them to withdraw their application.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, which is to approve the withdrawal of the application by First Choice Academy, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. By the way, the staff evidently has done a pretty good job. We've had a number of groups withdraw, and to me that speaks of good staff work. Thank y'all.
Absolutely.
For saving us from that. Okay. Academics update, that's Robbie, but you wanted to make an introduction.
Okay, just I think everybody knows Robbie Compton.
Is Robbie here?
He's on his way. I just
On his way in here. We have set up with Robbie as assistant superintendent a plan to be more cognizant of the academic performance of the schools. Now, we've certainly monitored it every step of the way, but I think some of the discussion we've had is that we really want to meet with the schools. Already his team's been out and met with a couple of schools that are having problems academically. We want to know how we can partner with them to improve academics. But and let you know, the test scores are still embargoed, but we'll have a profile for you as soon as those are released. But Robbie's going to give you an update on where a couple of our schools are right now. Next month, I've asked Dana, again, with Elliot's permission, to come in and talk about our schools that are having operational, financial, or academic issues, ones that we've put in out of compliance, and letters of caution. So we'll have a little more report succinctly on where we are with some of our schools that are really, I would say now we have five or six schools in serious trouble, either with enrollment or academics, and we'll have a full report on that next month. Robbie?
Grab a chair.
Yeah.
Okay with
everybody. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. Oh, spilled coffee this morning. That way I can hide it. That's it. What, real quick, guys, and what we've done, we've given you two things. One of the item that's separated is the current SAT and ACT scores for our seniors last year. Two things just to point out. And there's a little bit of a confusion between ACT. I just want to make sure that we understand what we're looking at here. All the students in South Carolina, number 11th grade, took ACT last year. However, that's not what these data are showing. That data is still embargoed, and they're still working out student files and all that fun stuff. So that's not this. What this is are the seniors that were graduating last year and their average SAT scores and ACT scores. So in a few months, we'll give you a second update. We'll also use the letters ACT again. Two completely same assessment, two completely different numbers and purposes for those numbers.
Two different grade levels from last year. We're looking at seniors here.
So these are students that graduated last year that could have taken ACT at any point or ACT or SAT at any point, but they were not the ones in the 11th grade cohort last year that all took it.
Did I hear you correctly? You said all the students in South Carolina take SAT?
They take ACT.
When did that start?
this year.
Yeah, they...
ACT has contract testing now.
And they test every student in the state?
It's the...
Every senior?
11th grader, yes, sir. Major changes in the accountability system and state assessments over the past 2 years. And to complicate matters, to tell you what it's going to be this year...
Yeah, HSEP has gone out. This replaces HSEP.
Oh, okay.
And what I might do, if it's okay with y'all, is just, next week I'll make a little, the next meeting I'll make a little cheat sheet for you, showing you what the old was, what the new is. And there are still some assessments that we'll be using this year, the state will be using, that we still don't know what they are because the RFP just got released. They're hoping, I think, by middle of October to be able to finalize or at least tell us if we'll be using ACT Inspire again, if we'll be using ACT, and there's a few other assessments as well. So the contract that we went under last year was only for 1 year. So they're got it back open for RFPs again. But I'll break down a little cheat sheet next, or for the next meeting for you. Just want to point out really quick, and again, this is just for bragging purposes. You know, not every student takes ACT, not every student takes SAT. For these set of data, obviously, every student, 11th grader, takes ACT. But for what was just released, because again, we're just the seniors. So when you look at the charter school district as a whole, our mean score was a 21.4, and statewide, it was a 20.4. And I'm looking at ACT right now. So our district average was, our district mean was higher than the state mean. And we had several schools that were even higher. One that has already done a little bit of publicity themselves would be coming to the Scholars Academy. Their mean was a 24.5, which is one of the, as you asked, but I think the, one of the top three charter schools in the state was coming to the Scholars Academy. And there's also comparative data from 2014 in there as well. And then just really quickly on the backside, SAT. The district's mean composite score in 2015 was 1,449. The state was 1,428. So again, our district's seniors' mean composite was higher than the state average. So a little bit of just bragging material to pass out. That was sort of impromptu stuff we pulled together for you.
Because at least with the SAT, I know that the, a couple of years ago they changed the format. You could, I think at one point the highest you could earn was 15 or 16.
So it's gone from 16 up to 21, and then they've dropped it back down.
To?
I believe for this year, if I read it correctly, everything's dropping back down to the two assessments at 16. I don't think they're staying at the 2,500.
So they've dropped the writing?
They added a writing.
And what ACT, what's the highest?
A 26, I believe.
No, 36.
Thirty-three, I think.
Thirty-six.
So again, just some bragging material for that. The other thing we've given you, and the data in here is old and not current, and I'll explain here in a second, but essentially it's just a academic profile of all our schools over time, just to kind of give you some trend data. We've broken it into two sections, with a little bit of an intro. The pages that were before the yellow just kind of give you a 500-foot view, kind of looking down. So, and broken out specifically elementary on the first page, middle on the second, and then high school. And what these scores are either going to be PASS or HSAP. And you'll see that the data that sits right now, the most current is 13-14, so it's still a year and a half old. We do have the new scores. They're embargoed. They haven't indicated or given a release in terms of when that embargo will be lifted. I had to guess. I'm thinking probably the middle to late October. So again, what I can publicly give you is the 13-14. What I imagine, if it's okay, in a few months, we'll do this again once we get the new data and can add a new column for you. Arrows really quick. If I'm looking at page one here about math and elementary, really quick, I can tell you, 2008-2009, the district's percent of kids that met or exceeded was 61.2. The next year, we went to 60.5, and that's why we have a downward arrow there, color-coded, letting you know that there was a negative trend. If you see the arrow left to right, that lets you know that there was no movement in either direction. The other pages that might be of interest, and we've got them in alphabetical order, and then there's a few schools that, once you throw in the word South Carolina in front of every school, some schools that you would expect, like Connections, you normally just say Connections, but in here it might be listed as South Carolina Connections, so it might seem a little out of order, but the pages that are behind the yellow are the specific school level trend data over time. And I will just really quickly give you a quick review of like Bridges, just to let you know what the color coding is about. Again, 13-14 is the most current year. For that school, you see a bunch of NAs. They took no, they weren't around in 12-13, so there was no assessment that they used. On the other pages, you'll see if there are two data points, we begin use the trend arrows to go up or down to kind of just give you a quick glance of movement. The color coding on the right, and again, just looking at Bridges, which is the first page, the first school alphabetically. If you were to look at the color coding on the right, for ELA third grade, 80% of their students met or exceeded. The resident district, which is listed above, would be Buford's. Buford's data for third grade was 77.5%. So the green lets you know that the school met or exceeded the resident district for that grade span. The next column after that, SEPCSD, the district average was 74.6. Again, Bridges was 80, so that's why you see green there, that Bridges exceeded what the district's average was. And then state average as well. And so the greens really quickly let you know that the school in the most current set of data exceeded either a resident district where they physically are located, our district, or a state average. The red or pink, depending on how you're going to look at that, let you know that it's just the opposite. And so really quickly, for Bridges here, third grade, 73.3. The resident district, which would have been Buford, would be 74.0% of their kids met or exceeded. They were just a shy below. That's why you see the red there. And so, again, what we've done is just given you a trend to look at, just simply putting proficiency rates down. As we get a little more savvy with our data and analysis, we'll continue to add and build on kind of this academic profile. But again, kind of wanted to give you just a look at across the board where what the trends are looking like within each of our schools. So it's something y'all can walk away with. All the data in here are public. None of this is embargoed. Again, what I imagine is probably in November will be the first meeting after the embargo is lifted that we'll add the additional column to let you look at the difference between 13-14 and then 14-15.
B, is that B average or what's B mean?
They're average. So the would be their AYP, their grades associated with their report card.
Okay.
This, all right. Federal. So, like an example for Bridges, again, not picking on them, they're just the first one up here. The school doesn't have one, they're in year one.
Yeah.
But the resident district would. Our district had one, and again, the state.
Okay.
And then there's also graduation rate. I'll tell you that the graduation rate numbers, when you can kind of compare to states, especially in some of our larger virtual schools, a lot of that goes into how they calculate rate. And you know, so those numbers do look not quite where we want them, but there's so many factors that go in there that a lot of the students that transfer in already are either a year behind and impacts our cohort score. But again, as we do a little more savvy with the data and the way we look things and the things that we are looking at, we'll be able to update this in time.
The quick example of this data and going meeting with the schools, Calhoun Falls went from an F school to an A school, had a data following model that was just absolutely marvelous. I mean, we were sending people there to look at what they were doing through some board action and through some personnel conflict. They dismantled what was really working great for them. They still have some of the institutional history factors there, but if you look, we're pointing out, folks, you had an excellent model. It was working well. Now you're starting to dismantle some of this, and look at your middle school scores. They're going down. You've got a trend in the wrong direction right now. So that's where we think the academic team can go in and say, we're noticing something. We're not telling you how to run your school, but we're saying this is a red flag for us, and we want you to start paying attention to what we're doing. I think when you see the new data out, you're going to see some real trends, both negative and positive, in some of our schools that we want to point out. And some of those Dana will discuss, because some of the schools that have been in trouble or academically are still in trouble. So.
I got a question. excuse me, on graduation rate, 38.1. for the district.
Yes.
That seems really low.
It is.
Okay, what are the reasons for that?
If you use the calculation that the state uses across the board, I give an example of where we take hits in graduation rate. If a student was to enroll, a ninth grade student was to enroll over the summer at any one of our schools, and then no shows until that kid gets picked up somewhere else, he will negatively or she will negatively impact that school's graduation rates. Provost is an example that I like to use. Just I was at a meeting they had where they actually during the advanced ed accreditation. And when you look at Provost graduation rate here, not the greatest. But then the data that Provost actually has, it talks about like 63% of the kids that were enrolling were automatically a year behind out of the cohort. And so they were coming in not as a first-time ninth grader, they're coming in as a second-time ninth grader. Or second-time 10th grader, then 60-something percent came in already a year behind. Of the kids that were graduate eligible, I think like 93% of them actually graduated. They were eligible to graduate at the beginning of the year. And so that's the kind of the data that tells a little bit more or more accurate story versus the way the state calculates. The state does a four-year cohort, a five-year cohort. But you know, a district like ours will always, while I think the current data for this past year is up a little bit, and maybe by 10%, I believe, somewhere in there, it's always going to look a lot lower than the state average when you compare it, using the formula that the state uses.
And are you saying that's because of the virtual schools?
Or the transientness of just the student that we get. Obviously, the virtuals are a good majority of our students, and that's where you see a lot of the transient type of movement. But then, we see it also within our brick and mortar high schools as well.
So people that come in high school and don't graduate with us, they go to another school district to graduate.
In a case like that, I believe that follows back with the kid. It's the kid that comes over that then decides, well, I'm not doing successful in my traditional setting. I'm going to come over to this because mom wants me to, and the kid thinks it's an opportunity, and he hangs out for three months, and he doesn't go anywhere else. His data will be resting last with us, so it's the last location where the kid was picked up. When we are an alternative for kids, as some of our schools are an alternative for dropout. So they come over, they try it, and didn't work, but
yeah, in the working group.
Elliot and I met with one of our virtual schools, and in that they pointed out that a student had enrolled in the school but never showed up, and they couldn't find where that student had gone. But because the student was enrolled in the virtual school, they counted as a dropout for the virtual school, even though they never attended one day in that school. And so a lot of students that are looking for an alternative method of trying to be successful a lot of times end up in the virtual schools as a matter of just, we've tried everything else, let's try this. So.
And you can also take a little bit of a spin on it. While not every kid that comes over is coming over as a option instead of dropping out. You know, some kids are really coming over because it's an option. So, you know, to take the spin, well, not all 38% of them, you know, that were calculated in that cohort, you know, you can't necessarily say that those 38% would have been a dropout somewhere else. But those are kids that got a diploma that, you know, in some cases, this was an alternative for them that, you know, wasn't being provided to them in a traditional setting. And so, you know, so when you look at us at the state average, it's low, but you take the kind of the opposite approach that, you know, that theoretically could have been a kid that would have been a dropout somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we had a positive impact. It's just not shown in the way that the state, you know, calculates its.
Yeah, we're trying to pay attention to the amount of time the students are with the school. So
right.
From our point of view, even if it's a five-year graduate, if they're graduate, that's a positive thing for the state and
yeah.
for the
yeah.
district. Now, the feds will count that student, and I'll make sure I'm right, Courtney, the feds will count a five-year cohort as a dropout. On the federal analysis.
You better look at Courtney.
Yeah, no, it's calculated. It's calculated.
But they don't count as a graduate. Now, they do count against the four-year. The four-year grad rate is the one that everybody seems
that's
to
it.
Care
and
about.
And so they count against graduation rate.
Is that what this is, the four-year
yes.
graduation rate?
There's, we can't replace it. You know, it is what it is. But I think that we are looking at an alternative for a piece that kind of gives a little bit more accurate picture of our schools. Again, I, you know, I don't think that we would not report on the state and federal data. However, you know, we might be able to have some supplemental data that we put in there that might
yeah.
give a little bit, you know, a better reflection of what the schools
yeah.
are doing.
Yeah, I was thinking if we could.
My take on it, working with the feds, has been a five-year graduate should count as a graduate
yeah.
in the conversation.
Well, if we can put supplemental notes to our own
yeah.
Data, then I would like to see if we had the information of showing a representative graduate rate.
And as we've made the rounds this year, we, Courtney and I talked with a few schools that we'll be working with specifically this year, and one of the things in that conversation has been, you know, I know this data exists, you know, and again, I am I calling out or am I, you know, praising Provost? I am, but it just happened to be there that day when during that presentation. And that's the kind of data that really is going to help show folks, you know, charter schools are being effective. I mean, it's that data that's not the state, federal data
right.
that tells the story. And that's
right.
the piece
yeah.
that we want to explore to see how can we include that somehow, either, you know, within the performance framework, or, you know, when the data does get released and all this, you know, well, this is a year old data, when the new data gets released in the report cards, you know, that as we look at a press release or we look at, you know, how we're going to celebrate our successes, that we make folks aware that, you know, This is truly more of our story as opposed
right.
to kind of what you're seeing there.
I think that's a great idea because I think people just look for an opportunity to jump on us a lot of times. You know, you're going to hear the squeaky wheel, if you will.
Yeah.
So if we can back up that answer, someone can go right to that and go, good God, the graduation rate is terrible. You know, unless they have a story right there, supplemental, that gives them a clean cut kind of and here's a representative number.
I've always made a point, both in the Senate, my presentation with the Senate and the House is to point out why that's where it is.
Sure, great. So, again, some reading material for you, and once new data becomes released here, probably in about a month and a half or so, we'll have that and get you the updates.
Okay. Thank you.
Elliot was going. Tell us a little bit about he's been on the job now 2 days, 3 days,
that's right.
But has been spending some time here and there visiting schools, and so Elliot, the floor is yours.
Sure. Yeah, and I look forward to our next board meeting, and I'll be a month in on the job and would love to kind of have a deeper discussion about first month observations and what the next couple months looks like if I can be afforded that opportunity. I'd say early impressions, I've been really impressed by the schools that Wayne and I have visited, kind of pleasantly surprised, frankly. I came into this knowing what our school's fiscal challenges were and not knowing what to expect with, you know, what they would do with that. Some of those lean resources, and I've just been really impressed with the creativity of our school leaders. We went up to Greenville. And we're there for the first, I think it was the second day at Next High School, and saw kind of a seminar style some seminar-style instruction happening, and it, you know, all the kids were, you know, just fully engaged. There was rapt attention, and the teacher was talking about the difference between prose and poetry, and I pulled a couple kids aside and asked them how they liked it at lunch, and the kids were just fired up about, you know, the innovation happening there and the ownership they could take in that school's direction, designing literally the next facility that they'll be in. So just super interesting, great vibe to the school and culture. Lead Academy, really impressed with Rodney and his team over there, and, you know, seeing how these charters need to be entrepreneurial and resourceful. You know, now they're on a church campus and super tight quarters, but, you know, they had a plan for everything. Kids were moving quickly in transitions, and great instruction in every classroom. No fear of dropping in on any classroom as we walked through the halls, just told us, hey, where do you want to go, and, you know, opened doors for us and let us see some great things. So really impressed with Lead. And with Next, Quest, you know, is a school that looks like it's got a lot of challenges, and, you know, this is something that, again, I don't want to, you know, take too much, draw too many conclusions from first impressions, but didn't see the same level of instruction happening there, didn't see the same kind of culture of high expectations that I know we would all want to see in our schools at Quest. So definitely, you know, challenges and opportunities to do better. Similarly, in Spartanburg, saw High Point and Spartanburg Prep, and, you know, very driven leaders, Spartanburg Prep. I mean, that guy's gave me a signed copy of his book. And I told him I'd read it over the weekend.
Did he try to lift you? Did he try to lift you up?
No. I'm sure he could bench press me like 100 yeah. times. Well, I've gained about 20 pounds since moving back, so maybe not. But
and he's had back surgery, so.
Has he? Well, just the biceps
and shoulder
alone.
Surgery,
yeah. But yeah, that school really reminded me of a school that, you know, great schools I've seen growing up and being part of education for the last 15 years, some of the great schools we had in Tennessee. So just remarkable and clear demand for the schools. There's a wait list there. Green Charter, same thing. Adeem just blew my mind. You know, this guy, you know, they play Vivaldi, you know, to move through. There's not a class bell to Vivaldi. And just really impressive, creative stuff happening. High Point, I mean, I've never seen a school facility like that. It looks like a giant mall. Hallways are 300 feet wide. But they're figuring out a way to, you know, do something great with it. And every school leader was really focused on, just like what Robbie presented, data and how our kids are doing. And we didn't have to ask them that. They were talking about that themselves. And that's what I really want to look for in our school leaders and what we authorize and, you know, the people who we want to grow. So I've been really impressed with the schools. And then the staff, I've only been here for a couple of days, but people just dropping in, and, you know, everybody seems to be solutions oriented. And, you know, one thing we talked about a lot in Tennessee is this idea of looking at every person and wanting every person to be humble, hungry, and smart. That's kind of like the very simple rubric that we use. Are you humble, are you hungry, and are you smart? And so far, I've got a really strong impression. Very, you know, conscientious staff and a lot of humility, a lot of hunger, and a lot of smarts on this team. So, but again, you know, I mean, we haven't even had, you know, our first date, so to speak. I've just met folks. So we're going to spend a lot of time next week. Wayne's going hiking on his annual pilgrimage.
That's right.
So I've scheduled one-on-ones with everybody on the team, just a full hour one-on-one to really get to know them, hear more about their role and their work, and so I expect to just learn a lot from them about who they are and what they're doing as I kind of get a sense for, a little bit deeper sense for what we're doing. So I guess the final thing I'd say is, you know, I actually loved our discussion earlier in thinking about, you know, what we want to be. And you know, schools are doing a great job. Those are the kind of schools that I want us to figure out how we deliver a value proposition to get the great schools staying in our district, growing in our district, entering our district. And I think we want to be the best place, not just in our state, as we're competing with other authorizers now, but in our country, for great schools to operate. That's what we want to be. We don't want to be the best place in the country for not great schools, mediocre schools to operate. And so I think us really kind of checking ourselves and thinking about what is it that we deliver on, what is it that we offer, funding, resources, how do we support them, how do we create an environment where they can innovate, and we're clear about our expectations for their performance, and we're clear about our role and their role. And, you know, one thing we saw in Tennessee was we did a whole lot in our first couple years in our schools. And we got feedback from the operators about what was really helpful and what, frankly, wasn't. And some of them, you know, really wanted us to lay off in certain areas and put our feet on the gas in others. And I think, you know, I would encourage a discussion with our operators, with the board, with our team around, you know, kind of our identity and that identity around the value proposition for great school operators in this district. And we want this place to be a talent magnet. We want this place to be exactly where the best leaders in the country come and grow and serve our kids. So that's what I look forward to, kind of working with our staff and with this board and this community all across our state to develop. So that was my first impressions. Happy to answer questions.
Anybody
you guys
any
have any for me?
Questions I want to ask you other? Okay. Well, Wayne has told me that Elliot has really hit the ground running.
A good traveling partner, too.
Did he?
Yeah. Well, I think we solved most of the problems.
We did. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun. I'm already missing this guy. I think I've had a really good time with Wayne, and everywhere I go, it's clear. I mean, I was really impressed with him my first day when this camera crew came in on this story. And I'm used to being in front of cameras just in my line of work, but I was thankful Wayne was there to take that one. But he stepped right up and walked a really fine line and did it with such, I think, not just precision, but, you know, speaking truth to power around why these decisions were made, and they were made in the best interest of kids, and we're gonna stand in our truth in those moments. And that's really, really important to come out strong and swinging when you need to. And I saw him do that, so I appreciate, you know, kind of witnessing that leadership. But it's been fun. I hope to see all the schools in the next month or two and just kind of map out the state and get to the ones that aren't just doing great but are really challenged, so we can, you know, really think about what we're doing with those schools and what we're not doing with those schools.
Okay. The next thing, I wanted everybody to get their calendars out. I would like to schedule between now and May a couple of meetings that would be either 100% or 90% devoted to board development and by that, really, I'm talking about as much as anything else, reviewing the strategic plan and maybe some of our policies, but mainly the strategic plan, especially with the transition taking place in leadership. I think it's important that we do that. So we can do it one of two ways, it seems to me. We've tried in the past. One is to have a two-day meeting, one just a regular board meeting, and another then completely devoted to development. Or if there are a couple of months when we could have a very attenuated agenda and pretty much just do the very basics on the agenda. And have that something that we could be through with in no more than an hour, and then devote the rest of the day to board development. I assume that the latter would be more palatable for everybody. Am I right about that? Rather than trying to schedule extra days?
Yeah.
I know for those who travel that it's easier.
Two days out of the office in a row.
Yeah, I know. It's hard.
Really?
It is. Or even if they aren't in a row.
Well, it is nice. I don't.
Kids sometimes
got
a nice for me.
Right, yeah.
It is nice, but it's that having to go back.
He works on the clock. You do. So as much as anything else, maybe then, is the staff, Wayne, telling us when would be some good months.
Well, let me give you 2 months that probably won't be good, and that's January and February, because starting in January, you could start receiving applications. January would be okay, though, because February 1st is the date they're coming in.
And Catherine, but the deadline for applications going forward will be February 1st, so I would think March, April, and May you would be having hearings.
January might be a good time, because that would be a month where none of the could have an application at 2N, but it wouldn't be anything the board would be required to do. It would be all staff.
Well, how about this? I know we normally, or at least I guess half the time, we don't have a December meeting. What if we just had a meeting in December on the regular date? Just for board development, and another one in January. Do two meetings back to back. and really get a lot of that kind of stuff done.
Again, in January, the same regular public
meeting? Regular meeting. How do people feel about that?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be really good.
Ron, does that suit your schedule? I know board development is something that you really want to be at, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. You've been very quiet, and I'm surprised because I thought this was going to be something you were going to be.
I'm instigated.
You're right.
Don, just to let you know, there's an outside chance, I don't think it'll happen, that we may have a hearing in December if three possible schools could submit before the end of the year. Hopefully they're not, but that is a possibility. But it would be only one at the most, and I'm thinking that's not going to happen.
Even so, if we suspended everything else on the agenda.
That's it.
And then that would still, again, especially if we're going to do January too.
Yeah.
Then if we can plan on that, and also remember that, you know, when we're doing board development and trying to work with strategic plan and policy and everything, put a star on those meetings on your calendars, because anybody who's not here, we lose your input and we lose your thought and you know, benefit of your brain, and we need that to really do a job of it. And what I will do then is I'll get with Wayne and Elliot and start developing an agenda for those meetings. Now, what I'd really like for y'all to do is send me any suggestions, any things that you would like to see the board talk about, and some of the things we talked about in executive session that somebody mentioned, that was a good discussion. Laban, I think maybe you said that. But anyway, things that you feel like need to be addressed at those meetings, get that information to me to help develop the agenda. And if you don't complain about the agenda.
One of the things that and I don't know how you might want to do this, but one of the things that's going to be more and more problematic, there are now probably fewer of us on the board that have been through the board training on policy governance.
Right.
And those that have not. And so we're operating on two different wavelengths.
Right.
We've got to figure out how to get that.
What if we did the shorter of the 2 days, maybe dealing with that? I'm certain there's some things we need to look at with our policies and all.
I'm not saying address the policies. I'm saying addressing the board members who have not had
right.
The training. Right.
How many of you realize we're supposed to be operating on policy on
the Carver model?
On the Carver model.
Well, if you served under Don's tutelage.
What's that?
5 minutes, you're certainly aware of that.
I didn't hear you.
I said if you served under Don's tutelage for more than 5 minutes, you're aware of that.
but I think you're right in that there hasn't been any training, so to speak, right. In what that means. And all I'm thinking is if we had somebody here to do that, one of the things that would help is also address a policy towards the end. I mean, you talk about the theory and then actually mm-hmm. do it.
Yeah, because we've got some policies that were developed from the policy governance framework, and we've got some.
We still got some that need to be converted. Yeah. You're right. Okay. I think that's a good idea.
Is the fellow, his name just Paul. Right out of my head.
Paul.
Paul, or somebody was in residence at Spartanburg. Who was up there for a couple of 3 months?
Are you thinking about your?
Yeah,
Brian Carpenter.
Brian Carpenter.
Yeah.
We had, you remember we had him?
I missed one of them. That might
No, this was back when
Tim was.
Oh,
before my time.
Yeah. Anyway, you remember that one?
Oh, sure.
I got a really bad taste in my mouth because he came in with an agenda, and the agenda was to save Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Now I do recall.
Well, all consultants come in to say the superintendent.
Well, not if I've got anything to do with it. All the consultants that superintendents like come in with the agenda to say the superintendent.
We've had Brian in to do training for our staff, and he does a good job when you talk about governance and just those things.
Right.
He's excellent. He's one of the best I've heard.
Okay, well, maybe as long as he understands that he's not here to save Elliot.
I don't even know this guy. So
But yeah, we can look at he, the guy Paul, somebody.
It was just a thought. I didn't know if he was still.
He's still at York. He's still under contract for a year.
Well, then maybe he could run down for a day. That might be easy.
And he might could do it
For free.
He would. For what? He owns us. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Then he's not their head of school, is he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
He is their head of school?
Yes. For a year. During an interim for a year. He was going to help him.
I don't know how I missed. I thought he was just a consultant.
You know everything. How could you not know that?
I missed that one.
He came there as a consultant. And
they hired him as interim.
The hiring kind of fell through. They had two candidates they brought in, both decided to go elsewhere.
We can talk about that all the time. So count on then December and January being given either 100% or almost that.
That's December 10th and January 14th.
Sounds right.
That's what I
some governance refresher and work on that. And visiting our strategic plan and looking at that. Elliot, you should have enough time in the saddle by then don't you think, to be ready for that?
I'll be ready to roll.
Okay. And the three of us will work on the exact agenda and what's going to be there. And again, any input would be appreciated. That doesn't necessarily mean that we'll be able to get to everything. You've all of you give me a lot of stuff. But usually when you get input for things like this, I find that it groups into three or four kind of categories that we can address. Okay, great. I think that will be really good. Okay. Superintendent's report.
Okay, a few things. One is, I'll double check it. Now I'm thinking that some of the things I've sent out lately didn't get to the board, so we'll double check on that information. But one of the things I did send, I hope you did see, is that Elliot and I have worked out a transition plan, including working with the staff too. So this would be my last board meeting as the superintendent. Elliot would take over in October. As Elliot pointed out, I'm in the woods next week in Washington State, and I've checked. There's no fires where we're going, so literally I'll be out of contact from
fires. I'll be here in the office.
Elliot can put out the fires here. So when I come back in, we'll use that week as a transition week. I'll be out of the office on Friday, and Elliot will be moving in. So September 28th, Monday, September 28th, would be Elliot's first day as superintendent. I've given him the task already of deciding what my title would be. I think we're just going to call me consultant at large or superintendent in pasture or something of that. So we'll work out that plan. I will tell you this. Elliot comes with a ton of good ideas, a fresh set of eyes looking at what's going on in the district and in the state, and he's already made favorable impression with everyone he's met, including the school leaders that we've met with. So I look forward to being part of the transition plan. I actually think it's pretty good. We're going to have a weekly meeting at Starbucks, I think we've decided.
Right.
Then we'll continue visiting schools together. So I think it's a good transition period for us. There is one thing I would like to work with Eric on before I leave, and I've talked to Elliot about this. I am a little bit concerned about the systematic way we're getting into giving schools multiple chances to come back to the board. as far as I'm concerned, I think Elliot's the same way. We're the only state I know of that says, if you're not successful this time, come back in a month or so, and then we'll see how it is. What I'd like to work with Eric on is a proposed policy. And again, Eric tells me our law, especially this year, is written in a way that's made it very confusing as to what the deadlines are for submitting a charter. But the I think we'd still put a policy in place to say that you have one chance to submit per calendar year, unless the board says, you know what, you were really close, and we're not going to give it to you now, but we'd like you to come back in the near future. So something along those lines, we'll work on that and bring something back to you, Elliot and Eric and I, and working with Dana, and also with some other states to see how they handle that issue. The fact that we've had two withdrawal and one who's been heard could come back before the end of the calendar year is a little bit problematic. So a little more systematic review of charters is what we're asking for again. So that's in the works. The October board meeting, remember that's in Charleston, or actually in Mount Pleasant. I do have some possibilities for... I think I've got plenty of those copies. We would like to do what we did in Greenville. That is, the board meeting is on October 8th, Thursday, October 8th. What we'd like to do is have as many board members and a couple staff members as possible go out and visit schools that day. So this is a draft. This is just possibilities, throwing it out. I'm not sure how many board members can be there on Wednesday. Again, as Reece said, it's 2 days in a row. I do know Betty's planning on being there to visit. So what we thought on the Wednesday is we would start off at Palmetto Scholars Academy. They're finishing up their year in school. They're on the old Navy base in a facility that's pretty dilapidated, quite honestly, but they've been able to do remarkable things academically. It's a school certainly worth visiting. And then I thought we would visit, we go from there to two extremes. You either go to McClellanville, where Creeks is, and Don did mention that he was willing to lead that if we needed him to, but I think
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, yeah. I think Dana would like to accompany the group too. She's never been to that school. I could, with Elliot or whomever, could take a group down to Low Country Leadership. So you would see two of our schools in the Charleston area beyond everybody seeing Palmetto Scholars. Now, things have changed just this morning. I really felt like, and Don and I have had the opportunity to visit Meeting Street Academy in Charleston. It's not a charter school, but it's really a remarkable school, accomplishing things with poverty and at-risk students that are pretty remarkable. Parent involvement is out of the realm of what you might think is a possibility sometimes. But the scholarships for students, it's just a good school. And it'll be a great chance to see Meeting Street Academy. I did contact the principal, and he said he would be glad to house us or have us visit as a group at 1:30 in the afternoon on that day when visiting schools. But he said to really get the Meeting Street experience, he would prefer us being there between 8:30 and 11. Now, I'd just kind of like input from the board. It's not a charter school. They have contacted us. We have talked with them about becoming a charter school, or at least replicating what they're doing in a charter school format. Don, you and I have been there. Don't you think it's worthwhile?
Yeah. The only thing I wonder is, though, if it would mean not seeing some of our schools. I think it's a...
That's why I put it in the afternoon.
I think it's a boost for our schools when some board members come.
Yeah.
So I think it would need to be in the afternoon.
Okay. That, and
if that guy feels like that isn't helpful, then...
Yeah. And he's perfectly willing to do okay. that. But I told him we had a board meeting today and we get input. I think that's good input. It absolutely, it does a ton of good morale boosting and contact with the school to have our board members come in. They really enjoy that. And there are good things going on at all three of these schools. So I think that's good. So we'll...
Events. I did a program at Meeting Street Academy. That's one where we worked with the parents and the students and created businesses.
I think even if we go there and he just kind of talks about what they're doing and how well it's working, I think it's a worthwhile meeting. So,
yeah, I totally agree. I mean, side note, he's one of my closest friends in the world. He came to Tennessee, was a principal in Fraser and Memphis with us, Dirk Bedford.
He
used to be the principal of Mitchell Elementary in downtown Charleston, so I met him when he was working for the district.
Can you say his name again?
His name is Dirk Bedford.
And is the lady still there, Sue, somebody who kind of oversees everything?
No.
She's not there?
No. I didn't see her name on there.
It's funny because he joked with me if you should call me superintendent. Should use air quotes when he sees us. But, I think there are so few schools serving kids like those at Meeting Street Academy that are doing it at such an extraordinary rate of quality and excellence that, you know, it's really eye-opening to see it because it's really creating some proof points that I think are worth.
Not only that, they're now running one of the Charleston County elementary schools.
Mm-hmm. Brentwood.
Brentwood, yeah. They've taken it over and running it under a management contract of some sort.
Yeah, they have a contract that's kind of similar to a charter where Meeting Street Education Group has full autonomy over talent decisions, and so they get the per pupil from the district, and then that group kind of supplements that per pupil, but they actually have an attendance zone in the Brentwood area, and they serve every kid from that attendance zone, so yeah, they're starting to expand and work with more kids.
Is Brentwood in the Promise Zone, or no?
No, it's not one of those schools. It's in North Charleston. It's not one of those four. Now, when that was conceived, they kind of saw it actually extending out into all those feeder patterns that would actually include Brentwood at some point, but it's not one of those four schools.
All right, and that would culminate. I think, Don, I don't know if you had a chance to confirm us going to dinner that night.
Now, when would Meeting Street, when would we be at?
1:30.
1:30
on Wednesday.
May I address reservations briefly? Hotel reservations, that block is ending this week, so if you are planning to need a room overnight, you'll need to click that link and register really quickly. It doesn't require a credit card. It does require a credit card, but they have promised me they are not charging those. They just need it to reserve the room. The district will be direct billed. I'll send out the link again for everyone, but my hope was everyone might have an opportunity to do that today simply because the block cuts off on Saturday, so no room reservations can be made after that, and that'll give me tomorrow to check in with the hotel to make sure everyone who says they've reserved is actually down in their system. I'm happy to help anyone after the board meeting today as well if you'd like to take care of that.
Yeah, even if you're not sure right now, I'd go ahead and make a reservation, and we can always cancel the reservation. And then that room's for Tuesday night if you're going to go Wednesday morning, or a Wednesday night if you're going to come to the board meeting Thursday and you need you want to be there in advance. The Don's going to check on having dinner together Wednesday night at
there's a pretty good Italian restaurant near the hotel, so Baca.
You're not
your
cooking
burger
for us?
No, actually, I did want to do something like that. I really did, but I can't make it happen. No, I talked to Wayne about that.
Okay, and then the board meeting, that's Elliot's first meeting, and I'm assuming it's going to be a pretty short meeting, so no hearing scheduled anyway.
And that's at the hotel?
Yes, good question. We do have a meeting room reserved at the hotel. And I've got the address there. It's Hilton Garden Inn on Mount Pleasant, 300 Wingo Way is the address for that. Now, throwing out another suggestion, Elliot and I have had a chance to visit the new school. Pima Scholars Academy is building a new school. They plan to move in right now in January 2016. into the school. They are, it's enclosed. They're pretty far along in the building of the school. I thought it might be worthwhile afterwards, either meeting over there or taking a van over there and doing a tour of the school. It's the same people who built York Prep Academy. It's a modular format, so it's really interesting to see the layout and have them talk about how they're going to get school ready to move in a very short period of time. I'm used to 18 months to 2 years to build a school, and they've come up with a format that takes about 6 months to build a school. Again, that's thrown out for a suggestion. I think it would really be worthwhile seeing that, but and I think even if the board chooses not to go, I think maybe some of the staff and I will go back over there. So those are ideas I've thrown out. You can give me or Elliot feedback on that meeting, and that's the plan.
The only feedback I would provide goes back to the meeting in Charleston. I know the point was made of giving visitations to our schools the highest priority. I would only challenge that to this degree that, and it goes back to the 8:30 time versus the 1:30 time. We have got to begin to visualize and conceptualize ways to be more effective, more successful with our most challenging students, with our poor students. And if we have an opportunity to see success, I mean, you can learn strategies, you can hear about strategies, but to see those things come to life would not only help us as a board, I believe, but would enable us and enable staff to help our most challenged schools as well. And so I would, if there's something, some reason, he says, in order to really get this picture, you need to come here at 8:30. I would hope we would try to figure that out, because I wasn't even coming for the school visits. I was coming. I mean, I've walked so many schools in my lifetime, I don't ever want to walk another school. But I do want to see this, because that's the one area where we're not being much more, if any more, successful than anybody else. And we have got to figure that thing out.
What about if we made that an option?
We could do a third group?
Do three groups.
I mean, that's an option.
You don't like it?
I've been in that school when it's active.
Yeah, me too. See, I've been there.
Participated in that school program, and so I could go on somewhere else.
Right.
That would help.
And I've been there.
You know.
We'll sit down and work. We'll work with our schools.
I mean, I see what you're saying.
I'll just throw that out.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I don't disagree with what you're saying. But I know when we went to Greenville, everybody didn't go to every school.
We didn't make it. But I would like to go to the meeting.
Yeah, Meeting Street's an interesting place, and I agree with you. Seeing it is fascinating.
I'll talk to him relative to being there at 1:30, what we would miss. I mean, students will be there. Or
could Palmetto Scholars be at 1:30?
Could be, yeah. So
do Meeting Street first.
Yeah, and that's certainly a possibility. I think it would be worthwhile for all the board to be at Meeting Street.
That's what I was trying to do.
Okay, and then split up. But then I don't think maybe some wouldn't stay until 11.
Sure.
See what I'm saying? Because I know these other schools would like to get busy.
Oh, absolutely. So. Let us work on it. Elliot and I will get together, and we'll throw out some more ideas, try to accommodate all of the things, and I'm delighted to your interest, and I hope we'll have a nice turnout on Wednesday. I know it's tough to have 2 days back-to-back, but that will be there. We're looking at 5 or 6 staff members coming down, too, so we will have people visiting the schools. All right, and the final thing I have is Reese asked for some information to share with the board relative to, it said county funding, but I think it was district funding because it sometimes differs in there. So I'm going to give this mostly for your information right now. It's in your packet. And Ron, I think, made the comment earlier. We are not the bottom of the hole right now in terms of state funding. We're somewhere, we're not quite in the middle, but we're approaching the middle of funding. To give you an idea, Greenville School District, their local funding level per student is actually lower than ours. Abbeville's local school funding, and there are a number of districts that are actually lower than ours, and it's really hard to we're sometimes talking about apples to oranges, but we've got our funding for brick and mortar schools is $3,600, and you've got a list front and back of all the districts in the state and how their local funding compares to that.
When you say local funding, you mean state funding?
No, it's local district. Their tax base in a local district.
Your house taxes.
Yeah, no, but our district doesn't get that.
No. What we did
was... But it says it under local funding.
Yeah, what we did was take our proviso funding.
Okay, so that's actually proviso funding.
Yeah, we get no local. That's a good question, though, to clear that up. Okay. And the... Did you have anything to add?
No, I was going to add, we only get the proviso funding because we get no local funding.
Right, exactly.
That's why we chose those.
Right,
so... And in South Carolina, money doesn't follow the student. Elliot will work that out, I'm sure.
Get that changed.
That's in his first 90 days. Yeah.
That's your first 100 days, right?
That's right. In the plan.
Abbeville, just quickly point out, the second set of sheets has...
Can I ask you a general question?
Sure.
This does not include federal funding, right?
No. And if you look at the second sheet... it's more it's more, you get more information on the second attached sheet where it starts off in alphabetical order, the school districts, and you'll see that 13 and 14 and 14 and 15, they haven't been audited at the state level succinctly yet, so that's why that EST means an estimate on their part. But let me just point out one of the things, a couple board members in Abbeville has contacted the school asking if they, Calhoun Falls in Abbeville County, might be interested into coming back in, or not coming back in, but being authorized by the local district. Well, I said, wow, that's interesting, but look at Abbeville. They are losing students, and if you're losing students, you're losing funding. And they've got 130 students. Dana, how many students does Calhoun Falls have?
Usually about 130.
I think it's about 130. So they would like to get 130. That would put them back over 3,000 students now. And if you look down the list, you'll see Jasper County, I think, has around 3,000 students. 400 of their students left Jasper County to come to Royal Live Oaks Academy. So it's good discussion here to get an idea of all of the funding levels. This is, in many ways, apples to oranges because categorical funding is included in the state funding, so there are a number of different variables. But it's good food for thought. We'd be glad to address any questions you have with this. We'd be glad if you're interested in providing more detail from a financial point of view on how our district compares to other districts right now.
Can I get someone to send me this Excel spreadsheet?
Absolutely.
Because I'd like to drill down further on that.
We'll send it to the entire board electronically.
If you could, because we've had this discussion, but it's been several years, but... If you would, for the board's information, this is the local funding. What other kinds of funding does our district get?
Okay, we get, to answer that question, we get proviso funding, and we get a base student cost funding that every other district gets also. So right now, it's 2211, is that
well, Tasha's right over there.
Oh, Tasha. 2,200. Every student.
So that's close to 3,600, right? I just want to make sure. Right. So I want to make sure everybody understands. 3,600 plus 2,500.
Okay, that's 2,200.
2,200 plus whatever federal.
Yeah.
And 2,200 is a base.
It's a base that every student gets. So even on top of their local funding, they get to $2,200.
They get that too. Yeah. So there's not a box like this for us. We don't have a.
No, but we could. Yeah. We could.
That would be good.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of what you said.
We've asked the State Department for the methodology that they use to come up with those numbers, and we're still waiting for that information because they're going to be updating that report.
Then you'll do one for our district.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I could figure out.
So is it safe to assume per each of our schools you get 36 and 22, so 58?
For each of our brick-and-mortar schools,
it's brick and
mortar. It's 1,900 provides.
And I understand that there are different types of students have different weightings, too,
right.
So schools aren't going to be
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I tell you what would probably be handy then is if you could, sometime if you're revising or updating this or something, send out a narrative that says, here's what we get. Here's what, you know, just explains it.
Yeah, where it comes from.
Right, yeah.
Okay. I apologize. I'm going to go back to the page that I thought I understood, but now I'm not sure that I do. Right, let's just look at the first. I'm looking at this document. I think you called it page
uh-huh.
two.
Yeah.
And you got per pupil revenue by school district for FY 2014-15. The first column says Abbeville, and then it's got 3,014. Is that total enrollment, charter, and public, or just public?
Just public.
Just
it
public.
Doesn't include, they don't have any charter schools.
Charter.
Now, if they had charter, that's a good question. If they had charter schools, it would include,
it would include
if they had authorized
yes.
charter schools.
So it would include charter
schools. If you look at your if, right,
if they had any that
local
they had authorized.
Local authorized.
Yeah. And that was why I was saying that may be one reason why some board members from Abbeville went to Calhoun Falls and said, you know, we have 130 students there that are mm-hmm. being funded through the charter school district.
And the state per pupil funding there in that box says 5462. What funds does that represent?
Where do you see that?
It says federal per pupil, state per pupil, local per pupil, total per pupil funding is 10,000.
Oh, you're in the
yeah,
you're
in 2010.
You're in 2010.
I'm 2010-11.
Okay.
Just
okay.
What that does.
Okay.
I'm
okay.
trying to figure out what that state per pupil funding is for district brick
okay.
and mortar school.
What they're doing there is they're taking out all of those figures, state, federal figures, categorical state, categorical federal, all of it. What the total amount is that the district is spending per student. And I think that's why Don was asking, can we do that for our district too?
But Reese is asking a different question.
Yeah.
What makes up the 4,462?
We're waiting on methodology to figure out how they came up with those numbers.
Oh, okay.
We don't have the methodology to tell you.
The 6249 for Abbeville. The 6249
for state pupils.
Well, move over to 15. Move out to the last column.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, we don't. I mean, if you take that number and divide it by the pupils, I'm assuming that's the per pupil amount for each section, but we don't have the actual methodology that they use. We're waiting on that from the State Department to find out what makes up that 3.4 million they have for federal or the 18.7. We don't have the methodology. They haven't told us exactly.
Here's where it could get complicated. If you look at Lexington 1, for example, and you look at that figure out by them, you're going to see it's one thing. But they also have a $280 million bond referendum that they're spending for technology and facility construction that's not included in this, we don't think. So that's why it's apples to oranges in some case. Spending with these schools.
So this is just operational, not any capital expenditure.
That's right. Yes.
Yes.
Well, and this is helpful, Wayne.
And
this is helpful. I appreciate the staff doing this. There were some emails that were being distributed. Just, I think I talked to you about this. Midland STEM, in particular, was distributing some information that just wasn't accurate, and there was talk about funding disparity between their students and local students. And I think this information, we need to have this information to be able to do our job, I think, effectively.
Yeah.
And so I think this is very helpful.
Yeah, there was some very erroneous information given out at that meeting.
Yeah.
And we have to, we've learned to really pay attention to this. A few years ago, we were listed as one of the highest per capita funding districts in the state. And we said, that doesn't make any sense. Well, when the State Department was doing their analysis, they took the funding that we received and then the funding we sent out to the schools and put it as all same funding. So they double counted our funding. So we had to write a few letters and deal with that and say it was totally erroneous. And again, we're a new guy in town, and even though we've been around for a while, so there still are things that we have to watch very carefully, or they get misquoted or misanalyzed because of us.
Okay.
All right. But as you look at this, we'd be glad to follow up with that, and when we find out how exactly everything that goes into their analysis, we'll do one for the district also. Okay, and I think that concludes my report.
Okay.
I have a quick question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Do we anticipate any renewals coming up in 2016?
No, I don't think so. We did send out a list, I think.
Yeah, I think
we have.
We did at one.
Yeah, we'll send that out again, let you know the timeline for all of our schools.
Yes. John?
Yeah.
Another email.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask a question about the balance sheet.
Okay.
Under the assets, there's several due from categories. One's pretty large, due from Lake City. What exactly are these due froms? There are some negative, under assets, there are some negative values. What? Due from general fund, due from federal agent, why is it negative?
Well, as far as general fund, that is money that we received back from the schools that were revoked.
Okay, so we owe that back to them.
No, we received it back from them once they closed down their.
Okay, all right.
And for due from federal agencies, we received the last federal reimbursement like August the 31st, but we did not send it out to the schools until like September the 2nd.
Okay, so really it's a timing issue.
For that.
It's only timing, okay.
Yes, and for due to from the EIA funds, mm-hmm. like we mentioned in the last meeting, that extra money that we received for like the charter funding that we could possibly have to give back to the state department.
Okay.
I mean, that money is included in there because it's
okay.
still here.
So most of it's just time. Okay.
Yes. All right. New from general fund actually isn't necessarily a timing thing. Is that something
no,
that
that's
we
not
classify?
A timing thing. Yeah. That's just extra money that we receive back.
Extra money? I'm going to spend that.
Now, does that stay with us or does that have to go back to the state?
Well, once the school closes down, then their assets come back to the
right.
state.
Right.
And that's That's all.
$4,000 now is still here.
Can we not reclassify that into the fund balance at this point?
Well, I mean, it is in the fund balance, but we didn't put it back into the general fund as far as the 100 code. Okay. We put it into another general fund, so we kind of have like separate general fund.
Yeah, separate. So we can't move that down into our equity section? Or would we not do that? Just
yeah,
not have a negative? I mean,
there,
I don't know.
Yeah, there, with the part of that money, we're still incurring legal costs.
Okay, so we're not
so,
with it then.
Yeah,
okay,
so we set it aside for that. You know, we have included over the last year or so the financial report. We started putting it in the consensus agenda. But these are good questions, and it may be time to just have a quick overview of the finance and how things are put in place since we've got so many new board members with there. And we'd be glad to do that if there's interest in and doing that, because
we could do it. We could pull it out again because it didn't used to be in the general.
No,
consumption.
Right.
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, just for one time.
Well,
just
any member could require some consent item to be pulled.
To be pulled.
Yeah.
I'd rather treat it.
I would too. Just if you would though, when we approve the consent agenda, if there's something you want pulled, you need to do it then. And
yeah, that's just policy that I'm not aware of.
Right, I know. That's all. Yeah, I'm just hitting a complaint. It's just remind you that look at that. When I asked, if anybody want to do anything about the consent agenda, look at it, because there's something in there. It might be something in the minutes.
Right.
Might be any number of things that you want to discuss. Yeah. Then say, I want this pulled out. Okay.
All right, that's it.
Any other? Okay, I hear a motion. Yep.
Did we get off to a good start across the board? I mean, nobody's talked about the first day of school. You know, we've got
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Of course, our first day of school is spread out over about a two-week period. But I think overall we've not had any major. I think if there's one problem issue, it's that we're about 1,000 students or so under our projection right now. So, and that's across the board. And as Dana will report next time, a couple of those are at schools that really didn't need to have less than projected enrollment. So we'll talk about that. But Robbie's our safety and person. So I think overall
no reports, I mean, other than just typical first day stuff and traffic pattern issues.
Yep.
Somehow make it to our office. But
for instance, High Point went from 600 students to a new 880 students, and they're in a huge mall, but the Department of Transportation plan didn't work the first day. We heard it was hours, but they've revamped that second day with the Department of Transportation. That seems to be worked out. You would think that if you're located on a mall, that stacking would not be a problem.
Right.
So, but they've ironed that. They even have a triage tent now for for folks that with water and help available for parents that are having trouble picking up their students. So.
I rode by a school the other morning. I was up in Myrtle Beach, and that, I guess it's Myrtle Beach High School. It's right down there from that Brazilian restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
The cars were backed up. My gosh. I mean, I don't know. It looked like hundreds in
there. Oh, it's a mess.
It is just, you talk about a traffic problem. It is a mess.
A lot of parents, especially young parents.
I've
you remember that first few days of school, they want to.
I was just
and they want to come in school and pick up their. So it's.
Well, this is a high school.
Yeah, that's because they all have cars now.
Well, no, there were drop-offs. I mean, it was. But you're right, because I used to take a grandkid to Wando every now and then. So that's what it looked like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
At my daughter's elementary school, which is also a mess, also up on 17, the traffic pattern once upon a time would come in, veer to the right, go around the school, and come back out, so that the traffic never crossed. Well, somebody decided in their infinite wisdom that this year they were going to go around the back of the school, come back around, drop off, and then come back and hit the traffic line and have to take a left in order to get back out to 17.
Yeah.
Well, immediately, if you don't make another change, that cuts your capacity in half, because at that one point, traffic can only be moving in one direction at one time, and It's a zoo.
Maybe the problem's Horry County. Maybe the problem's Horry County.
Yeah, who did we pay? Yeah, exactly. Who did we pay to come up with that?
Okay, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Is there any lunch, or are y'all?
Yes.
Cutting back. Did you buy a gavel, and so now there's no lunch?
Untrue. Ask Elliot where the lunch is. Elliot should have had the lunch here on time.
Right. Oh, this is Elliot's responsibility, right. Nice to have a scapegoat.
I would like to say, on a personal basis, I really have enjoyed working with the board. And Don and I have been together for 6 years, and for the most part, it's been fun, hasn't it, Don?
Well, we had a divorce.
This is your last week?
No.
I'll be here.
You're going to be at the meeting.
I agreed to critique Elliot's first board meeting, see how it goes, and we will sit on the meeting.